Asian Cup final is set, and South Korea is nowhere to be seen, pushing their title drought in the competition past the 60-year mark. Failing to live up to the lofty expectations placed upon them pre-tournament, we break down the Taeguk Warriors' campaign and assess everything from manager Paulo Bento's tactics to Sun Heung-min's captaincy and the potential for a cultural shift within the squad. We also answer your questions about the national team and players to keep an eye on for the future. All this and more in this edition of the K-League United Podcast. Hello, annyeonghaseyo. Ryan Walters here in a three-man, one-microphone booth along with Steve Price.
Hey, how's it going?
And Scott Whitelock.
Hi.
And we're here, gentlemen, because the Asian Cup is reaching its precipice. And as expected, Korea is not in the Asian Cup anymore.
It's already off that precipice.
Yeah. We're discussing what didn't happen as much as we're discussing what did happen. This is a little bit of a dissection today. But before we get into that, I would like to thank you two for harrowing the journey over and dealing with the K-League cat.
He's nice. Matt Binns is completely wrong about him. He's a nice cat.
He's the best of cats. Lee Jung-ho Rangi. The name stays, even though Lee Jung-ho is now in Japan. Sad days. Yeah.
Sometimes I wish I could send my cat to Japan.
The cat may or may not be on the table right now trying to earn his one-way ticket to Japan. But onward we go. Unlike, unfortunately, our Taeguk Warriors, who have bowed out of the Asian Cup, and that is exactly what we are here to discuss today, is Korea getting out of the Asian Cup a little bit earlier than expected. So we're going to be breaking this down in a lot of different ways because there's been a lot of chatter about it, and, we have a few opinions on this show about what happened. And then, of course, we have a little bit of a mailbag coming up later. But, gentlemen, let's just hop right in here. For those that are listening to this and somehow don't know, Steve, why are we in this position? What happened with Korea in their last game?
Well, in their last game, mm-hmm. I guess they didn't win it.
They did not win. No. That's correct. All right,
it's
done.
It's quite an interesting one because after the game on Twitter and on other places, I think there's a lot of comments, really kind of negative comments towards mm-hmm. Qatar mm-hmm. and kind of quite disrespectful ones. In my opinion, they're probably the fifth or sixth best team in Asia. According to the FIFA rankings, they're the sixth best. According to the ELO rankings, which are more accurate, according to a lot of people, they're fourth best. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're the form team going into that game of the tournament. They've got the top scorer in the tournament. Mm-hmm. The time they played Korea before this, they beat them 3-2, and the time they played them in the under-23s, they beat them 1-0. So when you look at it that way, I mean, you still expect Korea to win the game, yep. but it's not going to be every single time they're going to beat them. It's going to be a close game, and I felt a lot of people were a bit too disrespectful towards Qatar in their comments after the game.
Yeah, I mean, Qatar has had they've had a good tournament so far, and yeah, they kept a clean sheet against Korea. So I mean,
they've kept a clean sheet all tournaments, including you know their other games against decent sides.
Right. So Korea ran up against that brick wall, and they weren't able to get past it, but there were some warning signs before that, right? And we're gonna talk about Paulo Bento. We're gonna talk about the old guard. We're gonna talk about some of the players that've been here. Of course, we're gonna talk about Sonny. We're gonna do all of these things. But before we get to that, Scott, what were some of the things that you noticed in this tournament that you thought were maybe some warning signs before the Qatar match?
Well, I think we talked about it, me and Steve, in the last podcast. Mm-hmm. It was kind of possession football for the sake of possession. Not a lot of forward passes, not a lot of incisive passes, not a lot of forward thinking, really. And the one inside should have probably been on at that point. I think relying so much on the fullbacks like they did, mm-hmm. and when the fullbacks were playing dreadfully like they did in every single game.
Yeah.
Paulo Bento should have seen that something's wrong. But I don't think he really did. I don't think he picked up on any of that because they kept playing the same football again and again.
I'm going to have to disagree about the way they played football because I thought in their first match they played it exactly how you described it. But then in the final two group games, they were creating lots and lots of chances. So getting the ball in the box with nice incisive passing, and they created the most shots inside the box of any team in the tournament.
I think especially in the knockout stages, look,
that's when
stifled,
yeah,
just
that's when the problems kind of came
just
in.
Just pass the ball out to Kim Jin-soo, mm-hmm. pass the ball out to Lee Young, and it was hopeless football.
Well, let's go ahead and dive into one of the big topics that came up after this. We've kind of already touched on it. Paulo Bento, did he get his tactics right? Before we get into anything else about him and his reign in Korea, Scott, I'll stick with you on this one because you were kind of talking about the fullbacks coming up. Tactically, did he set his team up to win?
I think there's arguments for both. Possibly yes, possibly no. In the games preceding the tournament, Korea looked in good nick. They looked okay playing the same style of football that they actually did within the tournament. I think the problem was there was just no plan B when plan A worked.
Yeah.
I think the major mistake he made was in some of his squad choices. Taking a lot of the old guard out who had been left out for such a long time and relying on them was a little bit of a mistake, in my opinion. With hindsight, he could have maybe chosen a couple of different players. I think he made minor mistakes, but I think much of the blame should actually fall on the players' shoulders rather than himself.
Steve?
Yeah, I think tactically, if you, imagine the tactics in a kind of sterile environment, I think he got all of that spot on.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to the tournaments, there were the reason they lost wasn't because of the tactics. It was because I think the players were kind of fatigued and also kind of mentally they were not doing what they're supposed to be doing. We could see what they should be doing in the China game and in the Kyrgyzstan game. That's the way that Paulo Bento set them up and how he wants them to play. And then in the Bahrain and Qatar games, they were not playing like that at all. And I think there's kind of some of that reason is fatigue. We'll talk about Son and his fatigue later.
Yes.
But I think that's got a big thing to do. And I think I said in when we were talking about the China game that there should have been some rotation in that game because it is a tournament. You've got to keep your squad fresh. So for me, I think he should have rotated the squad more at that point when
You've got your six points. You're sitting on 6 points. Who cares if you lose to China when some of the third place teams are getting through? I think that might have been a chance for like a statement game of sorts because they didn't really get that in the first two. But I couldn't agree more that the squad should have been rotated more there.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, it seems like a lot of the issues are kind of coming down to selection more than tactics. And I think
there's also some maybe psychological problems with the team in general.
We're going to touch on the team culture.
Yeah, you could see the way that they wanted to play and the way they didn't. And a lot of the reason the fullbacks they're not crossing it in well is because there's nobody in the box, because the tactics weren't give it to the fullbacks and cross it in. If those were the tactics, you'd have two guys in the box looking to head at the ball. But the attacking midfielders were there behind waiting for a pass, and as a result were not in the box to attack those balls when they got crossed in.
The off-the-ball movement in the final third was either utterly predictable or non-existent. I think Hwang Hee-jo had a really great Asian Games, and I think everybody just thought, lob it to him, lob it to Sun, and they'll figure it out. And it felt like a low-stakes, low-level K-League game at times, watching them just hoof it up the wings and hoof it into the middle and hope that something would happen. And if we're sitting at home watching that and we know what's going to happen, you know the opposing defenses know what's going to happen. And I think one of the interesting things that really came out from this and from it being a more public event, a big tournament like this, was there are a lot of people in the press box tweeting out photos, tweeting out about the Korean staff, Paulo Bento's staff, losing their minds in the box because, as you were saying, the players weren't doing what they were instructed to do. And I think that a lot of that just comes down to, hopefully, fatigue, that they weren't necessarily in their right mind tactically at all times. But also, I think a lot of it comes down to pressure and a lot of other things on this team that don't necessarily reflect the tactics that were set out, because it seems like those were kind of ignored at times.
Yeah, I think in the last pod I was talking about the inflatable unicorns that the England team had to get rid of all that pressure and to kind of relax. The Korean team needs to do that. It needs to get that weight off their shoulders. I think everybody prefers being the underdog because you don't have that pressure. In this tournament, they're coming in and they've got the pressure because people are expecting them to do well. And I think it maybe it got to them, yeah.
Yeah. Well, sticking with Bento, there are two other things about this. We had David Yoon come in on Twitter, and he asked, is Bento still the right man to take Korea forward? Should he be given the chance to improve the team leading up to 2022? Before we get on to this, if he's the right man moving forward, I just want to touch base real quick on people calling for Paulo Bento's head after his first loss in charge of the team. He's lost one game with Korea. The culture of wanting to fire managers at the first sign of trouble is why so many teams perpetuate this issue and why there are systematic problems with national teams if you're just going to off someone at the first sign of trouble. Like, and we will talk about if he's the right man moving forward, which I think is a much better way to phrase this question, but there were just way too many netizens calling for the coach's head after his first loss. It astounds me.
It is astounding. It's incredibly stupid.
Yeah, the grass is always greener on the other side, right? You always imagine if we get rid of this coach, then the next one will be great. It doesn't work out like that. I mean, you could probably see with Monaco this week, they got rid of Leonardo Jardim at the start of the season because he started bad. Brought in Thierry Henry. He's done bad after 20 games, which isn't very long.
Who do you want to replace him with?
Yeah, only 20 games. You can't turn a team around in that time. Get rid of him. Bring in Jardim again.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody's like thinking, oh, let's just get rid of the manager, it'll be a good idea. The next guy, there's no saying the next guy's going to be able to do anything anyway, even if Bento had lost two or three games or even more than that in his start.
I mean, it also depends on what the KFA's thinking is. I mean, if short-termism is what they're going for, why not just let Shin Tae-yong stay on and lead them into the Asian Cup?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
KFA are clearly thinking about further ahead.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's one game. He's lost one game.
He's lost one game.
It's disappointing, but it's a crazy, crazy mistake to fire him now.
Some interesting comments in India when Constantine left there, with people thinking that they're going to get like Zinedine Zidane or someone like that. Realistically,
Jose Mourinho is looking for a job right now, but I don't think that he's going to be knocking down the door. That would be some interesting press conferences if he was here, though.
Well, I'd say Korea are more likely to hire Jose Mourinho rather than Jose Mourinho.
After whatever kind of season he has coming up with Jeonbuk. So that's, obviously I have a slight opinion about that. But that's more about the culture surrounding coaching and calling for managers' heads so frequently. And I think that it's different at the club level, because club level managers a lot of times have a hand in an international transfer market. That talent pool is literally worldwide. Whereas when you're setting up a national team, Scott, like you were saying with the KFA, they clearly have an idea here. They clearly have a plan. You need to give a manager more than a few months to realize that plan when his talent pool is literally just one nation on the planet. Like, he doesn't have all the resources at hand that club managers do. So he needs a little more time before I think we can really assess things.
You had it written with Claudio Ranieri when he was at Greece. He got written off straight away there, even though you only have a few training sessions before your match at international level anyway. So the amount of time that Bento's had with his players is very minimal so far as it is. And if you look at Qatar, they've even though their manager's only been in charge for 20-odd games, he was working all the way through for about over 5 years with the Aspire Academy and then with the Qatar under-19s all the way through up under-20s, under-23s, now the national team. So they've got that kind of continuity, which is really, I think that's a lot of the reason why they've looked so good in this tournament. Mm-hmm. It's because these players all know each other, they know the system and know how they want to play.
Yeah, and that takes time.
Exactly.
And this has been a very busy 12 months for Korea. We've had the World Cup, we've had the Asian Games, and now we've had the Asian Cup. And
all three of those competitions, you've had a different manager.
Yes. And I don't think that we want to go into the next tournament with another new manager.
Exactly.
So let's tap the brakes on that a little bit. And personally, I think that he needs to be given the chance. To go back to the question and the way that it was asked on Twitter, should he be given the chance to improve the team leading up to 2022? And I am of the opinion that yes, he at least needs more than a few months and one loss. But is he the right man for the job, Scott?
Well, he has a lot He has a lot of experience at top international level. When Career actually announced that they were hiring him, I was impressed. He's a complete step up in what they've had in the recent past. Managerial-wise, he's done well in his opening friendlies. He set the team up in a style and manner that I think supporters could get behind. He might not be the correct choice, only time will tell, but you need to stick by him. You need to stick by a decision that you made 6 months ago. You need to stick by your players. This blame culture from netizens that you mentioned, it needs to stop. It needs destroying, it needs eradicating. If players make mistakes in tournaments, they don't need toffee throwing at them. They don't need things throwing at them in the airport. If players make mistakes, you have to forgive them. You have to move on, especially younger players, which is what Career need to focus on now. There's going to be a generation shift soon. Younger players need time to grow. They need support. They need nurturing. And the country needs to get behind their football team instead of wanting and willing them to lose so they can tear them to pieces.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a big thing that we're going to see over the next 2 years with Bento in charge. Is when he was at Sporting and when he was at Portugal, he had a thing of bringing in young players and developing them as a team. And you've seen it a bit already with the players he's starting to bring in. I think now that the Asian Cup's finished and we're into the World Cup qualifiers, which are arranged in a way where you can bring in young players in that first stage, I think you'll see a lot of the old guard kind of disappear and a lot of younger players coming into the side.
Well, and that is exactly what we are going to talk about after we take a very quick break.
FNR is a revolutionary football-dedicated digital platform, the first of its kind in Australia. It provides a 24/7 live online radio platform experience, podcast hub, and acts as a content provider for TV, radio, and digital. Having reached millions of listeners and football fans since launching 13 months ago, FNR is accessible worldwide via its website or app, providing a platform to discuss, debate, and celebrate the world game. We are your voice of football, FNR Football Nation Radio.
All right, and welcome back. Ryan Walters here along with Steve Price.
Hey, how's it going?
And Scott Waylock.
Hi.
And in this edition of the K-League United podcast, thank you for that hi, by the way.
Hi!
We're talking about the Korea national team and their early exit from the Asian Cup. And I think one of the things that I wanted to touch on about what we were talking about before the break with Bento and people needing to get behind the team, and I forgot to bring it up then, I think it's interesting the difference between K-League and the national team, because we spend a lot of our time talking about K-League. And there, I feel like there's just a blind support almost to a fault, where when a team is plummeting like FC Seoul did last year, there are still people saying, it's okay, it's all right, we're still behind you. I don't want that level for the national team, but I do agree that I think it's gone too far in the other direction of people just really eager to jump
down their throats, to knock them,
or throw eggs at them at the airport, for example.
It's too easy these days to knock people.
Can be, if you don't take the high road, gentlemen. Not that we always do that. Anyway, moving on. One of the things that we touched on that Steve was talking about before the break was one thing that I think is on a lot of people's minds after this tournament, with Kuja Chol officially stepping down. Do you think that more senior players need to make the move down? Steve, I'll start with you on this one.
Well, Ki Sung Young kind of hinted about retirement after the World Cup, and he gets a lot of injuries, so I think he's probably thinking about it so he can prolong his club career. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he retires in the next week or so. I think Lee Chung Young as well, I think there's a lot of great attacking players coming through.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we'll see much of him in the national team in the future.
I think this was kind of a nice nod because he's in good form right now as kind of like a last hurrah with the national team for him, because you can't really see him being a part of the next World Cup qualifying squad, my opinion. But I think this leads into a few other things. But Scott, I'll ask you first. Do you think that there are any other players that maybe should or maybe will make that exit?
Yeah, I'll take it much further than Lee Chung Young. I think Ji Dong Won should step down too. I think you could go even as far as to say that Kim Jin Soo and Lee Young probably aren't going to make the World Cup. and it might be time for them to step away. Especially, Young was extremely disappointing in the Asian Cup compared to his K-League form.
Yeah.
Might be time for him to step aside. The likes of Hwang In-bom, Kim Min-jae, and Kim Moon-hwan, which is why Young should step away. They're the future of Korea. They need to start looking forward, forwards, not backwards.
Mm-hmm.
I would say goodbye to the older players, get the younger players through as soon as possible, and start building towards the World Cup.
And because the World Cup's so far away, and there's really no other senior tournament between now and then,
right,
that now's the time to look towards who's going to be hitting their peak in 2022, 2023 for the next Asian Cup as well, and start thinking about putting those players into the team. And I think that's what's going to happen, to be honest.
Yeah, it might need to at this point, because this leads into one of the things, I'm jumping ahead on what we thought we were going to talk about next. This leads into one of the things that I found interesting watching this, and I'm obviously I'm not in that locker room. I don't know if this is true, but talking about some of the older players, one of the things that I personally feel needs to change is there's a bit of a culture with this old guard that I think kind of needs to go away. I think when we were talking about the tactics and a few other things like that, it seems like when the game came late and somebody needed to step up, it seemed like the old guard went back to what they've done under every previous manager. I mean, as you were saying, this was Korea's third major tournament this in the past calendar year, and third different manager, and we've seen the same issues. We've seen this same panic late on, this same inability to play a smart pass after the 70th minute sometimes. You
it's
know?
Also there's they're kind of playing too slow. I think if you saw the friendly matches under Bento, they were playing in a different way. They're playing very fast, attacking much more quickly. In the match against Qatar, there's one point where Kim Jong-soo, he had the ball and he could have crossed it in, but he turned around and played the ball back to the halfway line instead.
A lot of negative passes.
Yeah, and he's like one of the defensive players. He shouldn't be doing that at all.
I think the problem is there's a cultural divide between the younger players and the older players in the squad as well. I don't think they're really a team as such. The younger players seem excluded from it. There's the famous story after the World Cup when Lee Sung-woo was interviewed live on TV, and he was asked about what he thought about Kim Young-won. And he said, "I've never spoken to him before." That should be a senior member of the squad, his role should be to mentor the younger players of the squad. But I think there's a complete cultural divide between the younger players and the older players in the squad. It might prohibit the younger players from actually taking games by the scruff of the neck and doing what they're actually good at, and just play into the hands of what the older players want.
Yeah, and I think we saw in the Asian Games that these younger players can take the game by the scruff of the neck, can't they?
Well, and Lee Sung-woo was obviously a bit of a controversy tournament-wide. Before his non-selection and then during the China match, his antics on the sideline. And this tournament, he did not perform well. He didn't look good in the minutes that he had.
I mean, he's not really ready yet, though.
But he needs to be in the picture, absolutely. I think he needs to be there moving forward. But he had... In the World Cup, he had some of that tenacity that I feel like Korea needs. He would just hit the ball. He would just shoot the ball on net. And I think that that's one of the things, talking about a cultural shift that might need to happen right now. It feels like at a lot of times this squad is looking for that absolute perfect goal. And they take an extra 25 touches before setting something up. And I don't think that's tactics. I don't think that's coming from Bento. And I don't think that that's something that I've seen with a lot of the younger players. So it seems like there's a bit of a cultural change that might need to happen in that locker room, in my opinion.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, one of the big reasons Bento was chosen for the job is because he's not the kind of manager who does that kind of 25 pass kind of goal too much. As I was saying in the friendly matches, you could see Korea were much more direct than they were under Shideke, and it seemed quite effective then.
It would be nice to see a little bit more positive passes and less horizontal and negative passing. But maybe that'll come naturally with a few of the more veteran players stepping aside. One of the veteran players that will not be stepping aside, and a man that we can't have a national team podcast without talking about, Sung Min. Let's, before we get into anything else, I wanted to touch on the responsibility placed on his shoulders and our own Matt Binns, who's off loving his vacation. We've heard. He came out on Twitter and he asked, is the criticism of Sun fully deserved? He's shattered after all, given his busy summer, busy season, and Christmas period, and Bento's need to play him for too much in the tournament. So, at its core, and I'll start with you, Scott, on this one, is the criticism placed on Sun deserved?
All right, I'm going to preface this with the fact that I'm not really a big fan of Sun Heung-min. I don't like
great start.
I don't like his on-field persona. I think he dives way too much, especially in the Premier League. But
good dance moves.
Yeah, those handshakes are just despicable. They're awful. You need to stop it.
If we're basing the team on dance moves, then Moon Sun Min will be starting every game, wouldn't he?
Get out.
You'd be happy, Ryan.
Get out.
But anyway, no, it's 100% not fair. He has unrealistic expectations placed upon his shoulders. And I think it's based on the fact that people watch him in a Tottenham shirt, where he's playing around world-class players. When he comes to play for Korea, he's around average players. And people are too ready and too willing to blame Son Heung-min for the failures of the national team. And it's not fair. He's not in the leagues that the Ronaldos and Messis. He can't carry lesser players on his back. I've seen a lot of criticism, especially on Twitter, about his commitment and his passion to play for Korea. I think it's criminal. You can see how much it means to him when he actually plays for Korea. He's one of the few players who actually steps up and tries to get on the ball and doesn't hide from it. He might not run around as much as what people want from a leader, but that's not his role in the team. His role is to be creative. His role is to try and score goals. I think it's completely wrong. He's one of the few players who actually don't just play A plus B equals C football in the Korean national team. He gets on the ball and he actively tries to make something happen. And instead of blaming Son, you should blame his teammates, really. There's not many of them who actually try to help him creatively wise. I think a lot of the players in the Korean national setup do hide from a challenge. They give the ball to Son, and then people say that Son is greedy. He's not greedy, he's just receiving the ball from his teammates. I think it's 100% not fair. Everyone knocks him down. He hasn't had a good tournament, he didn't have a good World Cup, but neither did the rest of his teammates, so the entire focus shouldn't be on him.
Fair enough. Steve?
Yeah, I mean, even though you say he didn't have a good World Cup, I mean, he scored that cracking goal against Mexico.
Sure did. Right?
I think the big problem is also at Tottenham, he plays a totally different role than at the national team. Yeah. Maybe you can remember earlier in the season for Tottenham, they were playing against Chelsea and he picked up the ball at the halfway line and just outpaced the entire Chelsea defence, rounded about three players and scored. When he's playing for the national team, if he gets the ball on the halfway line, he'd be in the same position as the Korean goalkeeper most of the time. All the rest of the play is in this really kind of tight kind of space where he can't use his pace, which is one of his best assets. So when you consider that he can't use his best asset, that makes his kind of total ability a bit lower than what people might kind of expect for him.
Well, and he's not superhuman. In the past 7 months, he's played in the World Cup, the Asian Games, the Asian Cup, and he's appeared over 13 times for the Spurs.
Yeah, it's no wonder he's saying that he's fatigued.
Yeah, his quote after the tournament was, "I wasn't fully prepared. I felt physically empty. I feel so sorry to have let down my teammates, coaches, and the fans." So he takes that responsibility on himself. We've seen that before.
I mean, the images after the...
Yeah.
I mean...
The meme, the Son's crying meme, right?
Yeah. But I mean...
There's
he shouldn't have been in that China game.
Yeah, there's an interesting stat from at Spurs when he had those games off for the national team where he took a break, and just having that rest after that rest, it was his best time of the season or best form ever for Spurs, pretty much.
Yeah,
just because he managed to get his energy back up, and yeah, that's why one of the reasons I was saying give him a break for that China game. He must be so fatigued there because he's had, as you said, three tournaments in 7 months.
Yeah, there was no reason to play him in that one. Well, again, I think Bento deserves more time, and I think that he did largely get the tactical side of things right. That was That was a big error. There's just no reason to put Sun in that game.
I mean, there's also the kind of reason is because Sun wasn't there for the first two games as well. So you want to kind of get your team working together as a team and playing rather than just putting them in the knockout stages. So there is that logic to it.
But they're all familiar with him. You know, they've played a few other tournaments with him. It just... Given, I mean, didn't he land that morning? Like,
he
not even had a training session with the team,
and he was
and just straight
game.
On.
Like, and he played that game really well. He was the best was player best on the pitch as well.
Yeah, that was his best game, ironically.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe you should play every game jet lagged.
Yeah,
right. Just from now on, jet lagged for every game. I think we would all agree that the criticism isn't necessarily deserved. But there was an interesting topic that came up this week that I also want to touch on, whether or not he should remain captain. Steve, I'll start with you.
Absolutely not. Because already there's too much focus on him. It's not because of him as a person. I think he would make a great captain, but there's too much focus on him. All the passes, the players look to him every time and expect him to do something amazing, expect him to become, Captain Fantastic or whatever. But if somebody else is captain, then he doesn't have to worry about the rest of the team. He doesn't have to spend all his time shouting at players to do their job when they're not. And he can focus on his game and not have so much pressure on him, because there's already too much pressure on him.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be taken off.
No, I fully agree. I think let somebody else talk to the referees. Let somebody else be the cheerleader for the team or the taskmaster that's getting them to do what they need to do. He should have more of a role, like you were saying, like he has with Spurs, where he's a lot freer in that team to just be a creative player. And I think that if he had that with Korea, that it could help. Because like you said, Steve, I think that there's just so much focus on him already. Having that armband on and having to be the one that's talking to the officials all the time and having to just be that center of attention. I mean, look at the Asian Games when he didn't step up to take the penalty because of the pressure that's on him all the time. Mm. And that's not what I want in my captain. I want Sun to do extremely well for Korea, but that match, that moment, that was when it started to sow seeds of doubt for me of whether or not he should be the one with the armband. He had his back turned for that penalty.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, and I mean, I don't even want to pretend to know what it felt like to be him in that tournament playing for his career and military exemption and everything else. Like, the pressure on this man is extreme. But all Bento has to do is just give somebody else the armband.
I completely disagree with both of you.
I was hoping you'd say that. Yes!
I mean, besides the fact that he's got terrible, terrible handshakes, but what is it? He's only lost one game as captain? He's lost one game as captain, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were saying, should we sack Bento after one game?
Does Bento have the pressure on him that Sun does?
I think he does. He's leading an entire nation. If he loses one game, people are telling him that he should leave Korea.
That's fair.
I think if you fire him now, which essentially it is, it's a humiliation for him. And I don't think you should humiliate your best player. And also, who else is there to take the armband? Who else is leading that team? There's no one. And although Son isn't a natural leader, I don't think he's a screamer, he's a shouter. Mm-hmm. I think he leads through performance. And again, he's not had the best of tournaments over the last two, but who has? I think he's something for younger players to aspire to. I think he bonds quite well with the younger players. You can see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he could really flourish as captain. I don't think there's any reason to stop him from being captain at all. I think the pressure would still be there. All the focus would still be on him. There's no reason not to.
I think it's just one thing that would take a little bit, just a touch of the pressure off of it.
Well, how? I mean, what is a captain these days anyway? It's not what it was in the 1960s, in the 1970s. Some nations share their captaincy around. Some nations just give it automatically to the player who's got the most caps. It's not what it was. I don't think it's going to take any pressure off him. He'll still be the first player in interviews. He'll still be the first player that people look to. Whether he's wearing an armband around his arm or not is...
Do you think it would affect his own mental state in the game? Because he has that many more things that he needs to think about.
I don't think so, because when I watch him anyway, he doesn't seem too concerned with other players as much.
But wouldn't it be nice if there was a player that did?
I don't think anybody in that squad is capable of doing that. I genuinely don't believe that anybody in that squad, maybe Kim Young-won, but...
I mean, as you said earlier about Lee Sung-woo and those comments, is Kim Young-won the best guy to be captain?
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the best case for Son being captain, is there's nobody else
who
seems like a natural choice.
Especially if you're going to focus on younger players coming through, I think Son's the natural choice.
Bring back Lee Dong-guk and the armband.
Hey, Matt Binns isn't here.
Can I get my transfer into China with Kim Min-jae now?
Oh, yeah. Transfer news is next week. So, yeah, we will be touching on that one. Well, anyway, we'd love to know your thoughts on Sun and Bento's tactics and everything else. And we will be touching on some of the questions that we had come in the mailbag right when we come back from this break.
Looking to spend some downtime with friends and fellow gamers in Seoul? Drop by Retro Game Bar. Located in Hongdae near Sangsu Station Exit 1, RGB is a retro game-inspired bar where you can play any and all types of games. Test their bartenders' drink mixing capabilities or watch a game cast of your choosing. For those with a competitive side, sign up for monthly tournaments including Tekken, Mario Kart and K-League United's FIFA 19 competitions. Follow RGB on Facebook for tournament info and details on other events throughout the month. Mention that you're a fan of K-League United to their hard-working bartenders when you stop by for a starter shot to kick off the evening. Game on!
Back to the K-League United podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Walters, along with Steve Price.
Hey, how's it going?
And Scott Whitelock.
Hello.
I was anticipating it. I was curious what it was going to be this time. And we are into the mailbag. Before we get into the mailbag, though, if you would like to have us read out your question or answer some of your thoughts, you can get at us on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, all those places, or you can email us at info@kleagueunited.com. And Scott, we've got a few ones this week.
Yeah, we've had a question in on Facebook from James McKeon. Sorry for the pronunciation, James. He wants to know, why didn't Bento start Choyonu? He says he's seen Choyonu make that save many times for Daegu FC. Mm. I assume he's referring to the Qatar goal.
I'm sure. Oh. Yeah.
Which, I mean, you can say that you've also seen Kim Sung-gyu save that many times as well, right?
I'm also not going to put the blame on the keeper for a 1-0 loss. You didn't score any goals. That's why you lost.
It was a really good strike, to be fair, as well.
It was. Mm. It was. I think it's a legitimate question to ask about Cho Hyun-woo, though. He was the starter coming into the tournament. Kim Sung-gyu was the starter before the World Cup, though. So it's one of those good problems to have as a manager where you have some very capable goalkeepers. Personally, I don't know that it would have made that much of a difference. Steve?
I think Kim Sung-gyu had a good tournament until that moment. Like, he didn't make any mistakes. He wasn't putting his team under pressure with pointless punches and stuff. Not that Cho Hyun-woo does that. Right. Cho Hyun-woo is very good at catching the ball and taking the pressure off his team. That's probably his biggest strong point for me. But I think, Kim Sung-gyu had a great tournament. He probably should have done a bit better with the goal, but it was a really good strike. But at the same time, I'm a big fan of Cho Hyun-woo, and I think we're going to see a lot more of him in the future. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be the first choice national team goalkeeper come 1 or 2 years' time.
Scott?
Goalkeeper's not the problem, like you said.
Yeah, fair enough.
Goalkeeper's not the problem. Bento clearly likes Kim Sung-gyu because he's got better distribution. He's better with his feet than Cho Hyun-woo. I like Cho Hyun-woo. But that's not the problem. It's not what we should be focusing on, really.
It's probably the first time that Korea's goalkeeper hasn't been a problem. If you think back to previous World Cups, they've always had a nightmare there. Now they've got some decent goalkeepers, so it's good to know that that position's sorted, at least.
Yeah, there's really no bad option back there. So no matter who starts, I think, again, when you get shut out, the goalkeeper's not the issue.
Yes.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on, we've had a question in from our Jeju correspondent, Branko Belan. He wants to know, how much criticism does Hwang Hee-jo deserve for Korea's exit?
Steve, I know how you feel about Hwang Eun-hyuk, so I'm going to let you take this one.
Yeah, I don't think he deserves much criticism at all. Like, his, he scored a couple of goals. He, his shooting, the shots that he had that didn't go in were all quite unlucky ones, hitting, like, the underside of the bar and things like that. He wasn't the guy missing open goals like Lee Chung-yong and stuff. He missed two open goals in the tournament.
Hwang
Eun-chan. And Hwang Eun-chan. So, I don't think he deserves much of the blame. I think the problem lies in the row behind him, the three attacking midfielders, and that's where the problem really lies in this tournament.
Yeah, Hwang Eun-joo, I think it might be another situation, kind of like Sun, where defenses know to mark him, and the team doesn't seem to do much to change that. They just keep lobbing the ball up to him and hoping he'll perform a miracle. And Scott, you jokingly brought up Hwang Eun-chan, but Hwang Eun-chan, I mean, he still got good speed, but just what a liability, possession wise, and just, I don't know. Hwang Eun-joo can only do the service. He can only do with what's given to him.
Hwang Eun-chan chose the wrong sport. 100 meter dash, he'd be amazing. Put a ball at his feet is a disaster.
I think the way the opposition were playing, there was not much space, not much space to do. I think Hwang Eun-joo showed with his that one goal where he just did a little flick and knew exactly what to do with it and put it in the goal. Is that he's a player who can deal with that situation where there's not much space.
He's a goal scorer, isn't he?
Yeah, in tight situations.
He's not a player who's going to create chances. He's a player who's going to score goals, and he's proven that this year. That's why he's the KFA's Player of the Year.
And Hwang Eun-chan, he has a lot of strong points he brings to this game. But those strong points weren't the ones which were needed in this tournament.
I think the problem is Korea played more passes than any other team who made it to the quarterfinals, but only 29.5% of them were actually forward passes. And that's a huge... Well, your face says it, everything. You can't see it, but
you
Ryan's
can't
face paints a picture.
There were some stats I saw on Twitter earlier in the tournament about how most... Out of the combinations, most of the combinations for Korea were between the two centre-backs or between the centre-back and the holding midfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's actually the same for pretty much every team. That's how teams pass the ball. So that's normally how players pass it around.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to creating and to where the forwards maybe are or aren't to blame, the fact that the winner against Bahrain came from a jumbo fullback connection says a lot. I think... Yeah, Hwang Eun-joo, I don't think, deserves too much criticism for this, but there needs to be a little bit more attacking talent coming in that will just at least create space in there. But again, at the same time, when you've got wingers that are coughing the ball up or just lobbing in prayers into the middle, there's only so much that the strikers can do with it.
It's poor service. It was poor service the entire tournament. I mean, against Bahrain... There was 35 crosses, only 3 completed. Against Qatar, 18 crosses, only 2 completed.
And I think, as we said earlier, it's like they shouldn't be crossing the ball, and that's not the way the team's set up to play. And so, of course, the crosses are not going to work.
Well, and this kind of goes back to the cultural side of things that we're talking about, and this is one of the issues that we see league-wide in K-League. Crossing the ball is not a high-percentage possibility. Like, that's not the best way to score goals. Creating on short, smart passes, using the middle of the field for other things than just lobbing it in, could be a way to score some goals moving forward.
It can work. It
obviously does.
Hwang Eun-joo goal was from a cutback, from a cross. Like, it can work, especially if you're playing that formation with 3 attacking midfielders. Mm-hmm. That's what the aim should be, for the fullback to overlap, to bring a ball back to the edge of the box and score.
I mean, it worked in the 2 games against Kyrgyzstan and against China. And to me, the big question about this tournament is why did it suddenly stop working in the knockout stages? And as we said, it's, I think, fatigue and culture. But you could see the movement of those 3 attacking midfield players really, like, in the last 2 games was non-existent.
Yeah.
That was a big problem.
Yeah, and I think Hwang Eun-joo was one of the guys that they kept just kind of looking to say, oh, you do it. You figure out the problem. So for me, I don't think he deserves much of the blame on this.
Yeah, I think himself and Son have harbored a lot to blame because they're the 2 main stars in the team now, and it's unfair.
Yeah.
It's really unfair.
Well, moving on.
Yeah, we've had something in from James Edrup, our Gyeongnam FC correspondent on Facebook. It's more of a statement rather than a question. He says, I don't think that it's much of a shock exit. Other Asian nations have improved tenfold, whereas I feel Korea have stood still and haven't improved for years now.
Well, there are two things on this. And I think the first thing is, while I would agree it's not much of a shock given the way that Korea played in the tournament, they were one of the favorites coming into this.
I think they were favorites because of the form they had before the tournament.
Right.
I mean, if you imagine right now that the tournament happened after the Sweden match, you'd never ever put them as one of the favorites, would you?
Right. But the way that they looked coming in, I think that was one of the reasons. And the talent that's on this team, I think that's one of the things we've talked a lot about the negatives and a lot of the things that went wrong, but there is a lot of talent on this team, and I feel like that's one of the reasons that they came in as favorites. So in that way it was shocking, but yeah, after seeing them play in the group stage, no, I don't think it was that shocking to see them bow out.
Yeah, I think when you look at the tournament as well, Korea haven't won it for like over 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not an easy tournament to win.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of expect them to win it when they've struggled before, it's not a given at all. And I think, yeah, I agree with the teams are improving.
Mm-hmm.
And Qatar are one of the teams that have improved a lot in that time compared to where they were 4 years ago or 8 years ago. There's been a few other teams that really impressed me in the tournament and looked like they're on the up. So definitely teams are getting better. And yeah, I think it's not a given to win these tournaments. Even if you're one of the favourites, it's a tournament. Favourites don't always win, you know.
Well, it touches on something that we haven't really brought up yet today, that this was the first extended edition of the Asian Cup. And do we think that that plays into some of the performances that we've seen from some of the bigger teams? Because obviously we're focused on Korea here, but also Australia is out of this tournament, the holders. And they didn't look great in this tournament either.
Yeah,
and that's one of the teams that you would have expected to do better. But these quote-unquote minnows have done really well in this tournament.
The Central Asian teams really, really impressed me.
Yeah.
I didn't expect they'd be anything, but they really impressed me. And I think it speaks volumes that there's three Western Asian teams in the semifinals, which is very, very rare. The lesser nations are improving. Korea's not improving. I agree with James that I think there's a crisis in Korean football, and there's no identity to Korean football these days. Other teams and other FAs have got clear plans of what they want to do, and they've implemented plans to progress. I mean, say what you want about Qatar, the way that they've gone around things, they've had a plan, they've implemented their passport in and things like that. But, it's funny, but it's not funny.
They say that, I mean, they don't have, like, Sebastian Soria anymore. Like, he was the guy, if you remember, Uli Stilike having a big thing about how Korea should be getting him in, like, even though he was kind of an average player.
Mm-hmm.
All of the players, they've got the passports in this. They've been in Qatar for a long time. They've developed in Qatar.
I mean, some of the passports that Qatar have contested. We're getting off the issue. Anyway.
I mean, they've developed their football in Qatar though through the under-23s, through the under-19s, through the Aspire Academy.
I think in Korea, there's not so much of a plan. It's more reactionary from tournament to tournament.
And it's a big thing about if you think of the clubs who. The teams who came from the World Cup, if you think about Iran, they've done really well, but they've had the same manager and the same plan for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about Korea, Japan and Australia, who have all not looked as good as you'd imagine in this tournament, all of them have new managers since the World Cup and trying to bring in a new style. And before that, they were preparing for the World Cup. Now they're preparing for a different tournament, whereas all of the so-called minnows have been preparing for this tournament for over a year.
Mm-hmm. Which... this wasn't a question that came in, but it is a question that I want to ask. Especially this year, but just in general, where should Korea place their priorities when it comes to the Asian Cup? Because it feels like it doesn't get a lot of attention here.
I think they should give it 100% effort. I mean, it's an international competition. Mm-hmm. Like, it's their continent's tournament. Like,
mm-hmm.
How can you not target it? Living in Korea, I don't think the ordinary Korean person really cares about it too much. Korean football fans probably care about it,
mm-hmm.
But I think the KFA targets it. I think they want to win it. I believe Paolo Bento took a team that actually wanted to win the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, he went out, he didn't say, oh, I'm using this tournament to develop players. He went out and said, I want to win it, you know. And that's the... I think they've definitely 100%, all the people involved in like the KFA and the team, they all are focused on it. But in Korea in general, there seems to not be as much. But, I mean, having the tournament in the same year as the World Cups, I think it's a bit silly. I mean, the next one, the next tournament's in 4 years' time. Mm-hmm. This one should have been like at least a year later.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It wouldn't have hurt to have had it in 2020.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I think it is something that they need to target. It would have been... It's easy to say in hindsight it would have been interesting if they were looking at this as more of a squad-building one, but then again, you had that with the Asian Games.
And you've got 4 years to build your squad.
Right, yeah. So I think I think they made the right approach, and I think that they did go for it, but it's just... there are a lot of very tired players coming into that one, and a few injuries that we had to deal with. But that was my question. Getting back to the other people that are asking questions around here.
Yeah. We've had one more question on Twitter from Lee. Goes under the username Rose Bissan.
Rose Bissan.
Rose Bissan.
That's, I'm sure, how you'd want to know it.
I'm sorry, Lee. I'm sorry. He basically wants to know, are there any other players that Bento could add to his squad that suit his style of play? Very difficult question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is one of the things that I'm sure Paolo Bento's asking himself right now after this Asian Cup. Steve, I believe you have a few notes on this.
I mean, they've got the players. I think we're talking about who else could they bring in to give them attacking talent. You've got to remember, Nam Tae-hee, Kwon Chang-hoon, EJ Song, all of these were injured.
Yep.
And all three of those could play in that attacking role. So a lot of their best attacking players were injured in this tournament. Mm-hmm. And that really affects the creativity when the players coming in are not the absolute top ones there. If you imagine that side with, you know, Son, Kwon Chang-hoon and EJ Sung as your three attacking midfielders, that's got to be the best in Asia, surely.
Yeah.
For that position. So there's, you know, they've got those players in attack. My worry looking towards the future, there's a load of really great attacking talents coming through, but there's not too much in not too much depth in the kind of holding midfield area. And especially with Ki Sung-yeon retiring, I think that's going to be the real problem position, which Bento's going to have to find a solution to in the next 4 years.
King Sejong, man. Ju Sejong.
Well, for now, maybe, in 4 years' time.
He's ageless. Doesn't matter.
He's late 20s, right?
Yeah, he's not the answer.
Okay.
No.
I thought I'd miss something there.
No, he'll be there for a few years. I think, as far, going back to the attacking talent, Na Sang-ho has obviously been a part of this picture. I think it'll be interesting to see how he does with FC Tokyo now that he's making the jump up to J1. Going from K2 to K1 is a big leap. Going from K2 to J1 and the differences he's going to have to deal with off the field and everything else, I think that'll be very interesting to watch.
When you're thinking 4 years' time as well, you're going to have Isung, who's going to be a much better player than he is now by then, after 4 years more of development. I mean, he's still right at the start of his career. Most people think that he's the finished product, but he's only played 10 games or something for his club.
Right.
In 4 years' time, he's going to be a lot better than he is now. Yep. Not saying that he's bad now or anything, but...
In that time.
Also, you're going to have players like Cho Yong-yuk, like Lee Gang-in, and they're going to be really top players and a lot better than they are now in 4 years' time as well. So there's a lot of talent coming through in those attacking positions.
Scott, are there any non-Suwon Blue Wings that you... No, I'm just kidding. Is there anybody that you think should be brought into the squad?
Well, I think Suwon squad should all be sacked anyway. But no, Kim Moon-hwan, Busan player, I think he'd suit a Bento team really, really well. What I would like to see is more younger players getting minutes in the K-League. I think the amount of young talent that's not getting time in the K-League is a big issue. I made a note in my notes about maybe the K-League could amend the under-23 rule. I don't know how that would happen, but I think too many clubs kind of bend the under-23 rule in the K-League. Sure. Too many clubs don't give youngsters an extended run in the team. It's bits and bobs here and there. And kind of like the young talent that is coming from Korea is from outside of Korea. It's coming from Spain, from the youth academies in Spain and things. So I think Bento he's got a good core of players, young players there, mm-hmm. but he needs more to choose from.
Well, I think that you touched on an interesting thing that I feel like a lot of the elite talent right now, Korea's still depending on Europe to yeah. develop their most elite talent, mm-hmm. and that's going to continue to be an issue. There are going to be players that show up every now and again that are coming through the Korean academies, of course. But I think when we're talking about the players that are on the radar for the average fan, that people are getting excited about, we're still relying on Europe to develop that talent. Yeah. That's a problem.
That's extremely dangerous. I mean, you mentioned about Lee Kang-in. There's stories about maybe he could choose to represent Spain. I mean, he's been there long enough that yeah. he could actually do it. And
he said he wouldn't do that. So fingers crossed he's telling the truth.
Well, yeah. hopefully. But I mean, that's the danger. If you're relying on other countries developing yeah. talent, yeah. they can easily prize that talent away.
And what is another problem for me with the K-League is that so many teams play in such a similar way
mm-hmm.
that when you have the K-League players coming in, they don't have enough versatility of playing different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe we could see that a bit with the way the fullbacks were playing, because
yeah.
they've only played in that one system in the K-League with the same manager, and both of them with the same manager for the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of versatility in the way teams play in the K-League. To me, that's a bit of a problem too.
Yeah, so I think we would... Again, at least, as we said, the future does look bright for the moment. There is some good talent coming through at a young age, but I do think that we would see even more and more. Again, this is a really good question because it's asking, does it fit Bento's style of play? And I think, Steve, you bring up a good point that the K-League as itself just kind of seems to have a style of play for all 12 teams in the K1, and for that matter, most of them in K2 as well.
And I think that's a bit big reason why it's so hard for the national team to just change its style quickly.
Right.
Because all the players you want to bring in to change the style, there's nobody to bring in who plays in a different way because they've all been playing in the K-League.
With that very similar tactical style for everybody.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so good question there. And one that we'll be keeping an eye on moving forward throughout the K-League season, which is what we'll be talking about the next time we get together, when we're going to be talking about transfers and catching up, because, gentlemen, the K-League season is here very soon.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah.
We're excited about it now, but in 2 months' time when John Bickford won the league...
Yeah. In 3 weeks before things kick off, when Jumbuck's already just handed the title, because why not? But that's what we'll be talking about next time. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can do so on social media. All of the social medias at K-League United, you can get us there. You can also subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, basically wherever you got this podcast. And if you want to kick off our 2019 in spectacular fashion, subscribe and rate us on YouTube, on iTunes. Be great to hear your thoughts on there. And if podcasts aren't your thing, which is weird because you're listening to this, but if they aren't and you want to listen live, you
they're
can hear
anymore.
Us. They're not anymore. Yeah, they're not anymore after today.
Oh,
you can
no.
listen to us live on Football Nation Radio down in Australia. That is every Thursday at 5 o'clock Sydney time or 3 p.m. here in Korea. But until next time when we are back to talking about the K-League, that's it for us. Thanks so much for listening.